What is going on, guys? My name is Steve Oatley. This show is called Freight Broker Live. It is the one and only talk show run by an actual freight broker out there. Today is April 10th. It is 2:01 on the East Coast. I got it all on time. See, you can see I've got some new studio equipment, so I'm super excited about that. Let me turn that off. So again, my name is Steve. Yeah, thanks. Hold your applause. Anyway, well, I double pressed it. See, I haven't put any other buttons on there. I'll put some more on eventually. Anyway, so yeah, my name is Steve. I own Freight Broker Live. I have this broadcast every day, a podcast that's called Freight Broker Live, and I talk about freight and what it is, and I talk about the industry, and I talk about all sorts of things and all sorts of fun stuff, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. Today's show is going to be a little unique because I'm going to focus on trucking associations, because if you watch the 5 minutes of freight video I did this morning, there's a lot of weird stuff that's going on with trucking organizations right now, and I'm kind of curious as to what you guys, what your take is on it. So if anyone's out there that's a member of the group Black Smoke Matters, if you would do me a solid and share this video out to that group, because it directly involves some of their members, and I'm kind of curious how they feel about it. I'm kicked out of that group, so I can't comment anything, because I'm also very opinionated and don't like BS. But so yeah, today we're just going to talk about all sorts of stuff. It is a call-in show. You can see the number up there. It's 914-803-4008. I'll also have it scrolling on the bottom of your screen just in case, because some people said yesterday they were unable to see it, and I don't want you to not be able to see it. Let me switch this color because it's kind of annoying me. There. So now everyone's going to be able to see that, and then we'll go from there. Those coronavirus numbers don't add up, said Mike Quaid. According to World-O-Meter, they do. Those are the United States cases only, and depending on how updated it is. Nomad Trucker said, of course you're kicked out. You have common sense and integrity. I know. So starting off with the worldwide cases, there are 1,675,285 cases and over 101,000 deaths worldwide. In the United States, however, we have, I can't even read that from here, we have 488,980 confirmed cases and 18,000 deaths. The numbers keep going up. There's 777 new deaths in New York alone in the past 24 hours. 232 in New Jersey, 56 in Pennsylvania, 53 in Louisiana, and another 19 here in Florida. It just keeps going, keeps going, keeps going. Who knows when it's going to stop? Eventually, it's supposedly going to stop eventually, but whatever. So yeah, those are the latest numbers for today. I know the president is speaking right now. I'm not broadcasting it clearly. I'm going to just talk. All right, so the first story I'm going to talk about is a pretty interesting one. I just wrote the article right around 12 o'clock today. It was a breaking news story about the FMCSA issuing another waiver, this time allowing third-party CDL skill test examiners to provide the knowledge test without any training to do so. Why? Because apparently we need more drivers on the road when we have an overabundance of capacity, which is driving the rates down. Again, this just kind of shows the disconnect in the supply chain and in logistics in general, because people don't understand. It just seems like that people don't understand the industry. You know, why they would do this? They've made it so now CDL permit holders can drive with the trainer in the back. So sleeping, you know, in theory, that's the one exemption that they gave. Medical cards can expire, CDLs can expire. There's all sorts of different things that they're doing to essentially make sure the supply chain stays valid and stays open and stays going. But they have this misguided representation that we do not have enough trucks on the road, which as a freight broker, I can tell you, we have way more trucks on the road than what we need right now, which is one of the main reasons why freight rates are so dirt cheap, because it's not hard to cover loads for very, very little. unlike what we talked about this week, I'm going to try to stick away from the broker bashing and stuff. So if you guys would do me a solid, anyone who's watching this, try to do your best to just stay away from that kind of talk, because it doesn't do anybody any good. And it's truthfully, it just wastes a lot of time in the show. So the next big story, the one that I really wanted to talk about, was it's another FMCSA one, but it also involves the Small Business and Transportation Coalition. If you guys didn't read this article, it's pretty interesting. There's no way for me to not have my opinion in the article. So let me just pull this up real quick. So the title of the article was FMCSA opens up commenting period for one of the most mind-boggling requests we've seen thus far. So for anyone who doesn't know what the SBTC is, it's a trucking trade group led by Mr. James Lamb and a couple other people. But it's a trucking trade group that is, they're advocates for the trucking industry is what they say. The small business trucking stakeholders is what they represent. So, and you guys can look them up and do all that stuff. I'm going to stick away from the man that runs it and the chairman, because that's irrelevant to this point. So the small trucking, you know, they used to be called something else, something broker, blah, blah, blah. And for whatever reason, they shut that one down and they started the small business transportation. They boast that they have over 15,000 members and all this stuff. And their, you know, prior reporting of mine, I kind of called them out for not having board members and different things and not registering with the state of Florida, because I'm in Florida. Their nonprofits registered in Florida. So when I was doing some investigating to decide whether I wanted to, you know, kind of blow the lid on the whole thing, which clearly I haven't done, I did speak to the chairman of that organization. At that time, he was the sole board member and president, and I informed him of Florida state law that requires him to have board members and he needs to be registered to accept contributions, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so he has a trade organization that has 15,000 members, so he says, and they're notorious for putting out really out there requests. So they put out all these requests all the time, you know, ban ELDs, do this, do that, all these different requests all the time, which is fine. But one of their most mind-boggling requests that I've ever seen, ever, it doesn't do anything to protect truckers at all. Literally, it hurts them. If it was ever going to be passed, which it's not going to. But so they have petitioned the FMCSA to give a 5-year exemption for small business freight brokers and freight forwarders from the $75,000 surety bond requirement currently required. And like I wrote in the article, and the reason behind this petition is non-existent. It doesn't make any sense. So for anyone that doesn't understand how a bonding process works, I'm going to just explain it real quick, because I'm sure some of you guys don't. So back before 2013, well, in December of 2013, we had this little thing called MAP 21. One of the things that it did, it was MAP 21. It was Moving Ahead for Progress in the 21st Century Act is what the actual law was. But one of the main things that it did is it raised the amount of a broker bond from $10,000 to $75,000. So almost immediately, you know, the prior trade organization, and I'm not going to, it was like Alibaba or something like that. I'm not even going to try to say what their name was. I know it began with an A and ended with an A. That's it, 5 letters. But that former trade group, and I remember them from back then, they sent out all these notifications and they did the same thing. We're going to sue the FMCSA. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And the reasoning behind it is they felt that a $75,000 bond was a barrier from entry for brokers that didn't have enough money to buy a bond. Again, you would think once you hear $75,000, you think, okay, that means a broker has to put up $75,000 in order to become a broker. No, they don't. They have to buy a surety bond. The cost, depending on your personal credit, is anywhere from from $1,200 a year to $8,000 if your credit's horrible. You are supposed to prove that you have, experience in the industry, all these different things, all these different steps to make sure that you have a broker bond. The problem is that according to the SBTC and the FMCSA, is the SBTC has a problem with the fact that brokers have to come up with $1,200 to get the $75,000 bond. So their solution to stop this barrier from brokers getting into the industry is to ask for an exemption for 5 years for brokers that make under $15 million a year. I get it. Your mind's probably blown already by now because it doesn't make any darn sense, but I'm going to keep trying to feed into it. And this is one of the things that's interesting because the story gets a little more weird. And James Lamb, if you're watching, you are welcome to call in. The phone number's scrolling and it's up here in the corner and you're welcome to call in. Or you have my cell phone from the last time we talked. You're welcome to call that and I'll put you right on the air if you'd like. Let me give you a little bit of education on the bonding requirements. So the purpose of the bond is not to guarantee payment from the shipper. The purpose of the bond is to guarantee payment from the broker to the carrier. The unfortunate side effect of a bond is a broker, unless they're a really, really, really bad broker, typically their payables far exceed $75,000. So think about it. That's 10 loads, you know, cross-country loads at $7,500. There's your $75,000. Most brokers, if they're worth a grain of salt, they owe quite a bit more money than $75,000 to the carriers. The issue is when a broker, because we just had this with one of our viewers, when a broker decides to just pack up and leave and not pay the carriers, the carrier is required to file on the bond. So file for that $75,000 or a portion of. The issue is if a broker owes $150,000, say he has $150,000 in payable, but the bonding amount is only up to $75,000, meaning that the bonding company is only responsible to pay $75,000 of that $150,000 that's owed. Typically, what they do is they settle for pennies on the dollar. The problem with that is the SBTC wants it to just make it so there is no bonding requirement. So therefore, brokers can literally, someone could pay $300, become a broker, get a direct shipper that pays him 10 grand for a load, and then he bails. And there's no recourse except suing. And we already know, I mean, you can go to the Pacific Financial website and look up. There's hundreds of carriers that have all lost their authority since January 1st. Hundreds and hundreds of hundreds that have pending cancellations in place, which means their bond's going to be revoked. If I picked out 10 brokers from that list, I guarantee I could. So let's say 10 brokers, $750,000 bonding requirement. Let's just say that each one of those brokers owes $100,000. Carriers are not going to get paid. So for some reason, a trucking trade group decided that it would be a good idea to try to protect drivers by taking away the only thing that guarantees them payment. It's mind-blowing. They did go into the fact, talking about unlicensed dispatch companies. And because to them, when MAP 21 happened, everyone had this new big barrier, so they couldn't up there, you know, they couldn't pay a couple extra $1,000 to get a bond, a $75,000 bond. So they all became dispatchers instead. And because there's even though dispatching is illegal or you need a bond to be a dispatcher, there's no enforcement and nobody's going to actually come after you unless you really, really screw up. There's nothing to be done about it. So in the letter, that's what he mentioned several times. He talks about dispatching and how there's no enforcement. And so they want, so the SBTC's position on this is that they want to remove the restriction to get a broker bond to fight to make it so dispatchers who are already doing something wrong will now be compliant, all at the risk of carriers. This is literally a trucking trade group organization. Kind of mind-blowing, right? Doesn't really make any sense. One of the funniest things is you can tell which author, because everybody wrote about this, because everybody knew it was a big deal. When I made the article and I shared it out, all the other trade organizations, all the other media outlets all wrote about it. They probably got a press release from James Lamb, but he doesn't send me it because he knows I have experience in the industry. Why am I going to talk about it? Why am I going to highlight something that's just berserk? You know, but I did. I wrote an article on it because it's just mind-blowing. It's one of the stupidest things that I've ever seen. Well, short of, you know, the next thing I'm going to talk about again that I talked about yesterday. Because it just doesn't make any sense, right? It's kind of silly. But when you read all the other articles that covered this, none of them mention it. They're just like, oh, the SBTC is asking for a waiver and blah, blah, blah. And it gave almost a positive spin on this, like it was helpful to the industry. Because not a single one of the other writers that wrote about this, except I think Transport Topics kind of was on my wavelength saying it doesn't make any sense. But none of the other writers that wrote about this works in the industry that actually understands that this is a horrible, horrible thing. That will never happen. This is never going to happen. It is a waste of time. And again, if this is an actual trade organization, then the members have some sort of rights to say, what the hell is going on? This is a problem with trucking trade organizations as I see it. There's not a lot of people in the power that actually understand the industry enough to actually be leading an organization. This is by far my most favorite story I've covered thus far, because when I read the actual documents from the FMCSA yesterday, it literally took me a half an hour before I could even start writing. Why? Because I was laughing so hard. It was the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. Yeah. Oh, wait, wrong button. See? That's what I sounded like. You know? Whatever. Silly buttons. I love this new thing. Seriously, I feel like a professional now. Anyway, so that was literally one of the highlights of yesterday evening writing it. I sent it to a bunch of like my close, you know, confidants on Facebook, and I sent it to them, the people that work in the industry. And everyone just did this, just scratched their head. And that's why I chose the picture that I picked. I'll show you this one. This is the caption I did, because it literally makes no sense. Like, who does this benefit? This certainly doesn't benefit trucking at all in the least. So the only people it benefits, to be completely honest, are people that should not be freight brokers, people that do not have enough money to buy a $1,200 to, let's just say on the high end, $4,000 or $5,000 or $6,000 a year for a bond to make sure they pay the carriers. So they want to remove that restriction. It doesn't make any sense. It literally doesn't make any sense. And then the next story we're going to talk about real quick, and then we'll just open it up and we'll answer call-in lines and all that stuff, is one that I thought was pretty cool. The OIDA and the ATA. So, and again, we're talking about trade organizations, OIDA and ATA. I've had my differences with both of them. You guys know how I feel about the current state of trucking organizations. OIDA is great for the smaller owner operator, depending on who you are and if you value what they have and what they feel. ATA is bigger. It's more for the trucking fleets. But again, they're isolated, so they just work in their segment. That's why I started North American Transportation Service Providers, is because it should be the whole segment. Trucking isn't just the guys driving the truck. Trucking is freight brokers, as much as you guys would hate to admit it. It's literally the entire industry, factoring, insurance, everybody. And that's how you can affect change, is by having all those groups work together, whatever. But this is one where the OIDA and ATA have teamed up with the International Franchise Association to make sure drivers are able to find food on the road. It's pretty interesting. If you look at the article I wrote, it's got a nice little picture that I found somewhere online. Anyway, but it just talks about how they've worked together, and they found that truck drivers are having a hard time finding places to eat. That's a given. Everybody knows that. So they've worked out with the Independent Franchise Association. They've worked out deals with some of the IFA's members, such as Firehouse Subs, Fuzzy's Taco Shop, Long John Silver's, McDonald's, Nathan's Famous Hot Dogs, Ruby Tuesday, Shoney's, I don't know how you say that, and Sonic. They basically have worked out a deal where some truckers are getting discounts. Some are just guaranteeing truck parking. Shoney's is letting, you know, drivers know which locations are open. McDonald's has the new app that they rolled out. So now drivers are able to park in a safe spot and order from their app, and the employees will bring it out to them. There's a lot of people that actually care about the industry and are working to make it better. And to curb into the story, it's funny because we have companies like this, and both the ATA and the OIDA were very outspoken about the NATSP, which is the, I don't know, the North American Truck Stop Provider, or whatever the hell they're called. The guys that wanted to remove food trucks from rest areas after the Federal Highway Administration allowed it, which, again, it's just one of those things that makes you think and just says, what the hell are they talking about? It just doesn't make any sense. But I will, I'll open up the phone lines. If anyone's willing to call in and get on the air, the phone numbers are 914-803-4008. You're welcome to call in. We'll talk and we'll go, the red number isn't that bad. Come on. All right. Let me see. Can I change it to a different color? How about this? Is that better? Less infomercially, whatever. All right, let me go up and start reading some of these comments. I saw there was a couple of broker comments in here, and that's what it is. Jeffrey Child on Facebook said, the shipper just loaded and strapped the load I just picked up. not 10 miles down the road, straps are loose, and the loose as a goose. Well, that's going to happen because the shipper can strap and do all the load because that's a procedure. But you as a truck driver are supposed to get out and double check. Because if you pulled out and something slid off and landed in a car and killed the people that were in the car, you would still be held responsible, not the shipper. It's your responsibility to make sure your securement is in place, which, you know. But you said their company policy is in place. Yeah, a lot of places are doing that. We've heard that quite a bit, you know, where they'll strap. And then there was one person that said, I saw it on social media. It was funny because they're like, the shippers can't, or they didn't want drivers to get in, and they wanted you to move your truck away from the docks before you got out to secure your freight on the flatbed and tarp and do all that stuff. And the guy's like, how the hell am I going to do that? I'm not moving my truck without this stuff secured on it, because they didn't even want him to get out and strap the stuff. They wanted him to leave their property to tarp and secure the goods. I'm sure that didn't last very long. Mike Quaid said, many more have recovered. I don't know. I can only go off of the worldometers and all that stuff. I could check on my website and see if it's any different from the John Hopkins. Map that I have on my website, which you guys can all find if you go to FreightBrokerLive.com and click on the coronavirus tab. And then if this loads up, you'll see it here in a second. If it does load, and then I could choose on the state. God, it's slow today, huh? Maybe because I'm live streaming, that's why. So the United States says it has 400. See, this isn't updated yet either. But this says United States has 475,749 cases. And then let's switch it over. Takes a little bit. 17,000. Total recovered says 26,000. So yeah, I think you're right, because I think the other one says, what, 18,000 are recovered? No, that says 26,187. So yeah. It's just different. It's where they all get their information. I know Worldometer gets some of their information from this one as well. So it's kind of all over the place. I don't know. I can't even speak on it. The only thing I could say about coronavirus is I don't go anywhere. I'm stuck in my house. You know, when this stuff came yesterday, I opened it with gloves and used soap and water to wash my hands because it was shipped from New Jersey. So I washed my hands. I did everything. And yeah, it is what it is. The box had a tremendous amount of bubble wrap in it, and my son wants to pop bubble wrap. He loves it. The 4-year-old. Speaking of 4-year-olds, you guys want to hear something funny? Because this really made my morning good. So all of a sudden, I'm sitting down, I'm getting ready to do my 5 minutes of freight thing, and then all of a sudden, I hear like a little bang because there's a bathroom on the other side of this wall, and then my son starts frantically crying. So I walk in, and he forgot to put his little thing on the toilet. He fell right in the toilet. It was funny. I don't care who you are. It's funny. All right, so let's go through some of these comments, and we'll go from there. If you guys want to call in line is active, 914-803-4008. You should call in, because I want to make sure the sound is working and all that good stuff, and there's not a lot of reverb. Nomad Trucker said, the capacity market is flooded with owner-operators doing our job. Megas are a bit behind because company drivers don't get paid enough to risk it. It's their problem. They deserve it. Yeah, but the response is, here's the thing. This is the real reason why the FMCSA issued that waiver about testing, and they're the real reason that the FMCSA issued the waiver last week about the allowing CDL permit holders to be in the driver's seat without a driver in the passenger seat, as long as that driver's in the, or that CDL holder is somewhere in the truck, is because of those megas. Those are the megas that are, you know, losing their contracts now and reverting to the spot market, which is just adding to a tremendous amount of capacity already. It's pretty interesting. It's what I was talking about on the radio show that I was on yesterday morning. It's interesting. Let me see. Mike Jamie said, what is your sales email to new customers that you send out? Right now, nothing. I'm not emailing new customers right now. Mike said, truckers blame brokers for the rates. Going forward, I'm going to lower the rates even more. Every time a trucker complains about the rates, I'm going to lower them to the point that I'm making 99% margin, and all the truckers are only making 1%. Truckers keep complaining about the rates, but it's only going to hurt you, your pocket, as I'm going to lower the rates even more than you. Oh my gosh, that is so harsh. Typical broker right there. Luckily, I know he's being sarcastic, because that's just silly. Gary Thornton on Facebook asked, how do they expect us to pay our bills with those rates? I can haul scrap and make what I would make with these loads out here. I mean, this is the thing, is nobody really expects anybody to make a living. I don't understand what the disconnect is. I understand freight rates are horrible right now. Everyone knows that. You know, freight rates are bad. There's nothing that, I mean, If you guys have seen anyone that has a DAT Power account, DAT released some new features today. Let me see if I can open it up. And I'm just going to show it real quick because I didn't get approval to show any of this. But if you have a DAT Power account, they have this new functionality in there. Hold on, I'll show you. Because it's pretty frightening when you actually look at it and if you understand it. It's called Market Conditions. And I'll show it on my screen here in a second once it loads. But it'll show the entire market area and give a 7-day forecast on what they think load volume will be for the market area based on all the information and the data they have. This, my friends, is not a good sign. Because if you can't see what this is negative 100. So if you look here, when you look at the it's got a little graph over here. It's loading slow because I'm live streaming right now. But this is very loose capacity. They're saying for the next 7 days, we are going to see very loose capacity everywhere where it's blue. Do you see the issue with this? The entire United States is very low capacity. Now, it does change a little bit if you look at dry van or if you look at flatbed. And that kind of softens up. It gets neutral. So you have a little bit more buying power in places like Shreveport Market. There's a little bit more buying power because there's more loads than there are trucks in those areas. This is where it'd be very important for carriers and drivers and everybody to use this kind of tool. But a lot of people don't have access to the tool. Reefer, if I look at Reefer for the entire index, let's see what this looks like. Still pretty poor. I mean, South Florida, where I am, out of that area, is pretty hot right now. Who knows whether it'll stay? I mean, I'm not a huge, huge, huge fan about all the predictive rating and predictive modeling and stuff like that yet because I don't understand it fully. I don't understand what kind of data they're getting to see this information. I wish that I knew so I'd be able to better explain it, but unfortunately I don't. So I can only explain it a little bit. But what's interesting about this, if you look at Reefer, it does 7 days. And so you can choose like a day. So let's see what Monday is going to look like. And then you apply the filter. And again, this is Reefer right now. So it shows, depending on the capacity, if you guys are out here, there's going to be nothing. The rates are going to be the same because there's going to be very, very loose capacity, which means there are a tremendous amount of trucks in those areas. So if you're sitting in this area, you know, anywhere over anywhere where it's blue, or to be honest, anywhere where it's not like red or orange or whatever that color is there, which is like this one, you're not going to be in a position where you're going to be able to negotiate high rates. And this is a tool that all brokers are going to use. And it's brand new. They just released it today. It's very similar. FreightWaves had something very similar to this, but I believe that this would probably, you know, because then, well, I'm not going there, but it's a very cool system and it's available now for a free trial, or I think it's free until June 6th is the email that I received. But as you could see, it literally, look, this is Monday. This is Monday and what capacity looks like for Monday's freight. If you guys want to see, let's look at next Thursday. So a week from yesterday and just see what next Thursday, what they're forecasting next Thursday for dry van. It gets worse. It's not very good, you know, it's not very good freight wise, but here's the thing about technology. You can use technology to your advantage here because, for example, say you're sitting up in, let me put this back on the screen. Say you're sitting up in Maine, if you got stuck up there for one reason, you know, based on this, you know, predictive modeling and all this stuff that may or may not be true or real or whatever. You know, and this could change though, because look, if you look at today, there's loads down here, and this is a hot area because there's loads and not a lot of trucks. But then I was saying, okay, well, if you're up in a cold area now and you head to a warm area, what's that going to look like for the next week? Well, unfortunately, now next week, this is all very cold as well, and the only warm place is like northern Pennsylvania. So it's, well, northern Pennsylvania and southern California. But again, this is outbound stuff. So this is hot, but it depends where you're going to. It's weird. And in a time where everyone is full and very uncertain about what's going to happen, technology like this is extremely, extremely important. You know, next week, I'm going to have an article where I'm going to talk about technology. I have a new show sponsor. I didn't get the logo up. So I have a new show sponsor starting this month. Well, starting now, today, whatever, Monday, is Ascend TMS. Because Ascend has some really great features and a lot of data and a lot of accountability and a lot of stuff. And they're seeing, you know, whatever. Because companies are needing to switch to a software that's able to manage everything and provide as much insight as you possibly can get. That's why this software, or the DAT market conditions that just came out, to me is kind of a no-brainer for everybody to have. That has it. That has the money. Like me, it's a free trial now for me because I already have DAT Power. If I didn't have DAT Power, I believe I would have to up my subscription to have DAT Power to be able to use this for free. I don't know what kind of cost it's going to cost in June, but I'm going to use it. I'm a broker. Why am I not going to use all the tools that are able, the tools that are available? There's supposed to be some rating tool here too, but I couldn't find it when I briefly looked before. But this is very, very cool because if you have a customer that's look at it from a broker's perspective. If I have a customer that's calling and says, hey, I got a load on Tuesday that I need picked up out of Tuesday. Right now, the market is such a variable. I could go and say, yeah, it's going to be $250 a mile. The chances are the shipper already knows that that rate's not going to fly. He already knows what he wants to pay because he reads and he does stuff, and he may even have this, the market conditions. The thing is, a lot of people don't realize is that brokers or shippers are pretty slick most of the time. They know what the markets are going to be. But if I look at, you know, Tuesday and say, okay, if he's got a load coming out of Pennsylvania and it's going to Texas, for me to figure out, I mean, it's even worse. It's even worse when you go further out, actually. So that's not a good example. I don't know. Maybe we should all just stop shipping, you know, maybe half the trucks. Maybe that's what people need to do is, you know, if you're, you know, A through, what is like halfway through 26, if you're like A through F, you got to, oh, I don't know how many letters that is. If you're like A through G, you got to get off the road on odd days. And then the rest of you can go the next day. Because that would tighten capacity up a little bit and hopefully drive rates up. But who knows? It's kind of a stretch. But all right, Tim on Facebook or on YouTube said, I can always predict what's going to happen after they did or didn't. If anyone tells you otherwise, they're lying and guessing. Yeah. That's true. Justin Schribner said, I use predictive rates when building out one of my customers' projects. I bid loads sometimes over a year out. Yeah, predictive rates are cool. Like I said, that's one of the reasons why I was super excited to join FreightWaves, because they have a predictive rating tool that is extremely accurate. Or it was back then. I don't know if it is now because I don't have access to it, even though I was supposed to. But the tool itself was very, very cool. You know, it was accurate based on the way that I quote as a broker. So I take the DAT average, I take the lane average, I take, you know, truck stops average, I kind of average them all out and figure out what I, based on what I've paid in the past, and that helps me figure out what I need to pay for a lane. Luckily now I'm not quoting freight like I was before. Now my customer sends over, he knows exactly how much he wants to pay because he's one of those shippers that does his job. He understands the market, unfortunately for carriers, but he understands the market. So today we got, you know, starting on Monday, we had 50 plus loads. We do not have those loads. We covered them all. Did we get carriers that were like, F you broker? Yeah, of course we did. Every single broker is probably getting those type of phone calls. But ultimately we covered the loads. We didn't make a boatload of money. You know, that's not the way we work. You know, I was talking to someone before the show and they're like, did you see an increased profit? Were your customers more apt to spend more? And I said, no, not really, because the customer is shipping non-essential goods. It's kind of like what I was talking about yesterday with a tough guy from the Jacksonville number. If it's not essential, we're not going to try to make it essential. It doesn't work that way. All right, what are some of these comments? If someone wants to call in, I'm tired of talking. 914-803-4008. Let's see. Mike Quaid said, geez, I feel as bad as a student driver. I had a commercial class one in the 80s, but stayed in aviation due to a bad driving record. I'm looking forward to a career change and do something new. Yeah, well, trucking may not be the best thing. Mike Quaid said, now it appears I'm adding to the... can't read that. Guilty of drivers. Yeah, I mean, we have an overabundance of... But here's the thing. Yes, we have way too much capacity right now, which is causing the rates to be super duper duper cheap. But the problem is when this whole system reboots, depending on when it is and how long it takes, when it does come back, we will be back in a capacity crunch again. Freight rates are going to come through the roof. You know, a lot of people are saying quarter four, and I probably agree with that. Maybe I don't want to say, because I don't know when the coronavirus, you know, pandemic, whatever you want to call it, is going to actually end. But if it does start rebounding by quarter four, you're coming into a holiday season where rates are typically up anyway. And if the economy is able to rebound and manufacturing picks up and we have all these containers and all this shit that's coming in, we could potentially see a very, very good Q4 and very, very good 2021. And who knows? You know, I also thought that that would happen this year, even before the coronavirus crap. Well, before it hit here as hard as it did. I thought because of what happened to China and when the containers start coming in. Remember, I used to say late April, early May, we're going to be super busy. We're going to. I was looking at trucks. I thought about going back in the truck myself and shooting the show from the truck. And I'm glad I didn't, because then I'd be paying a truck note right now and not using it. You know, because I'm also not going to go out and pull dirt cheap freight under what it costs me to operate. That's just not something I do. But yeah, having a CDL is going to be a commodity in the future, because as all the big trade and the big megas and all these other people say, we have a perceived driver shortage, which is why they're doing everything they're doing now to add all these, you know, trucks, which is kind of silly, because again, it shows a disconnect between people that are in a position of power in the industry and then the people that are actually doing the job. Because we do not have a driver shortage right now. We have an overabundance of capacity. Did we have a driver shortage last year? Absolutely not. And everyone said we did, but we didn't. We still had too much capacity. Rates were low because we had an abundance of capacity. And yet people are saying, well, we have 50,000 seats to fill. It's literally, it's kind of something stupid. Whatever. We have a caller. So let me pick this up. I hope it works. I didn't test this after setting up the new phone system. What's up, buddy? Can you hear me? Yeah, can you hear me? Can you hear me? Hello. I'll try it one more time. Can you hear me? All right, so it looks like our phone systems are not working, which sucks. And I don't have like a Google Voice number or anything set up. If you have my phone number, you're welcome to call me. Or if we're friends on Facebook, you can call me on Facebook, and that should work as well. Otherwise, we'll just have to deal with it some other time. That kind of sucks, though. I'll figure it out. I should have just did it different, but I didn't. Whatever. Volcano Nation said, hello, yes, I drive a truck class A and want to go into being a freight broker. Is this a good time to start? What's a good way to do the best start and other than to stay on it every day? I don't know. I wouldn't necessarily think this is the best time to get into it. Let's try to pick up this caller again and see if this works. Hey, can you hear me now? Yeah, can you hear me now? Nope, it's still not working. All right, so do not call in. Let me remove these numbers because apparently it's not working. Actually, let me see one thing. Check my site settings and make sure the right microphone is hooked up. And yeah, it is. So I'll have to test that later. It's hard to test it, though, because it makes it go live. But whatever. If you have my cell phone number, if we're connected or whatever, you're welcome to call in. If not, hit me up on Facebook if we're friends. And I will accept it if you hit me up on Facebook, and then you're welcome to call me on Messenger, and that'll work. Because unfortunately, right now, it's not going to work. But yeah, let me read what some of these other comments are while I take these tickers down so people don't call in. That sucks, man. I was hoping that would work. All right, so Volcano Nation, I think I answered your question. No, I wouldn't necessarily look into going into the broker side of things now. If you're at the point of being ready to get into the broker side of things, I would use this dead time a little bit as a way to get some education. Unfortunately, I do not recommend any freight broker schools or anything. But if you have someone that's willing to take you under your wing or under their wing and teach you a little bit about the industry, or just be very active on social media, because you have guys like myself, Craig Bliss, Laz, what's his last name? I don't remember. There's a lot of people that are willing to provide some really good insight in the industry. It's just whether you just got to pick through, because a lot of times you're going to get a lot of BS and you just got to pick through it. Alternatively, you can go to freightbrokerlive.com, which is this wonderful site right here. I'll show it again. And you can go to the consulting tab, which is right here, and then you could book some time and you know, we'll do one-on-one trainings or something like that, just based on my availability. But It is what it is. But other than that, I don't. Yeah, I don't know what to tell you. I don't necessarily think it's a great time to be a broker or anything right now. You know, just take as much time as you can to learn the business and pay attention to what's, you know, everyone knows about every single layoff. Another outlet today announced that there's going to be other layoffs and they're trying to, everyone already knows every company is laying off people. This is a very hard time. There's a lot. This is a problem on trying to go out for people that are looking to get into the industry and go work for a company. The workforce is going to be very fluid with people that really know what they're doing, because in the transportation sector, you either make it or you don't. And unfortunately right now is we had a lot of people who made it and were still laid off because they had to be, because companies couldn't float it. There's a lot of big brokers out there that have all announced layoffs in the past 2 or 3 days. And we're going to see articles later. You're not going to find them on my website because I'm not highlighting negative crap in the industry, but you will see some articles later. Speaking of articles, remember that article I wrote about a couple of weeks ago about TQL and the the layoffs? Yeah, I just want to reiterate to everybody, you can look at my article, which people said was fake, and then you can look at the new articles that came out 2 weeks after I broke the news and realize how similar they are and that there's no credit given or anything like that. I'm just saying, you know, a lot of take that, credible news source. Anyway, it's freaking annoying. Annoying to me. Annoying. Laz said, for you guys who do not understand why the rates are so low, you need to learn about supply and demand. The oil industry is going through the exact same thing right now with what Russia and Saudi Arabia are doing with the output. Need to purge the truck capacity by thousands of carriers and trucks in order for the rates to come back up. No. And I agree with the supply and demand. It doesn't necessarily, we don't need to purge any trucks or anything. The problem is that 60% of manufacturing is shut down right now. What they need to do in order for rates to come up immediately, yes, would be to sit trucks out. Is for drivers that do maybe have a nest egg and are good, for them to go park their trucks and stay at home with their families and take care of their families in a time of natural emergency, which is what you should be doing if you can afford not to be on the road, and allow the people that are actually out there that aren't, you know, that are upside down in their truck payments and all those guys to actually be out there, because that would drive up the rates. You know, as I say a million times, if it's hard to move a load, I've raised my rate. You know, so if we have an overabundance of capacity and people are taking rates that are dirt cheap, you know, there's nothing I can do as a broker. It's not, you know, it is what it is. Jason Miller on Facebook said he's being offered $1 a mile with my dry van. I'm deadheading home 300 miles for 10 on Monday. Hopefully the market will reset. It's not going to reset by Monday, but it's only going to get worse next week. I got a feeling this is going to be a little 2 weeks, 3 weeks or more. It's going to be pretty bad for the next couple of weeks. If you, my thing is, and my advice to everyone, if you can afford to go home and not get late on your payments and all that stuff, call your banks, call your lenders right now if you haven't already, and call and say, hey, can I suspend my payment, or can I get a forbearance on my payment? Forbearance. They do it. I'm working on another article. I'm just waiting on a friend of mine to send me information on commercial insurance companies that are doing things to help trucking as well. Because we hear about it on the consumer side, consumer insurance companies are going left and right, except, you know, they're not really doing that much. Like Geico, for example, my insurer, we have 3 cars that aren't moving at all. They're sitting because we're all quarantined in the house. So they said, oh, we'll give you 15% off when you renew your policy. Doesn't matter. We're older people, sort of older now, you know, in our mid-30s. We have perfect driving records. Our insurance is about as low as it's going to get anyway. So with 3 cars. I already read Tim's thing. Let's see here. Oh, God. I just skipped a whole bunch of them. I think a lot of people are going back and forth. Mike Jamie said, I want to thank you, Steve, Laszlo, and all the freight brokers who stick up for freight brokers. For many years, we were the punching bag of the freight industry, and anything that went wrong in transportation was our fault. Now we have a voice. No, no, we're still all the punching bags in the industry, and I think a lot of people deserve to be. There's a lot of bad brokers out there, and I'm not, you know, it just so happens that the good ones are the ones that actually speak out. You're not going to find bad people, you know, being outspoken critics of the industry. The only, or out, because that's what I am. I'm a critic of the industry. I think there's so many different ways that we could improve this industry to make things really, really better. And unfortunately, the people that lead the charge, they're not, They're not there. There's nobody leading the charge. What I would really say is we don't have anybody leading the charge for the whole of the industry. You have like ATA for big companies. You have OIDA for little ones. You got the SBTC for who knows what the hell they're for. You've got the SATSB for truck stops, and not even the big truck stops, just the little guys. You know, you have all these different trade organizations, TIA for brokers, but you don't have, well, now you do, but I'm just not, it's not set up yet. Is the NAATSP, whatever, North American Association of Transportation Service Providers, because that's really what it is. If you think about it, trucking is the foundation. The actual truck driving segment of the industry is the foundation. We wouldn't have commercial insurance. We wouldn't have freight brokers. We wouldn't have factoring. We wouldn't have roadside assistance. We wouldn't have any of those things if we didn't have trucks. So why not build a trade organization that is built around that and basically lives and breathes that principle? And works with the other trade organizations, the ATA, the OIDA, the TIA, you know, all those guys, and says, hey, listen, let's take and really try to affect some change so it works for everybody. But instead, everyone does these little things and going back and forth, and let's fight about this. And we're going to yell at Utah for making, you know, for sending an optional text message to someone's phone. It's not mandatory. It's optional. But that was big press, too. It's not, again, it's not something I covered. Because what good does it do? It freaks people out because now, like someone said in this show, you know, they have to go and declare they're foreign. You don't need to. It's optional to fill out the text message that comes. There's no penalty for it at all. And for anyone who doesn't know what I'm saying, in Utah, now when you cross in the border of Utah, they're using geofencing. So as soon as you cross in, kind of like if you ever went to Canada and your phone kind of goes beep, beep, you're international. Same thing. So now what it does when you go into Utah is it sends you a text message and says, hey, you need to fill out this survey to verify that where you've been in the past 14 days. Frankly, who cares? You know, they're choosing whether or not it's something that needs to be done. You know, 18,000 people have died. You know, frankly, I don't care. Is it going to stop? Could you, based on their rules, do you have to pull over right then and fill out this little text message? No, because there are no rules. There are no penalties if you choose not to do it. You guys are truckers. You're exempt anyway. You know, but again, it's just one of those things that people can hype people up about. It's very weird. I don't understand just the hyping negative stuff. Kevin Neiman said, since a broker bond is an issue, was it always as it always has been? Why not eliminate brokers completely as part of the financial part of the transaction? What would be wrong with shippers, manufacturers paying the freight bill directly to the carrier? A broker could still arrange for the quality of trucks and be paid by the shipper for his or her service. Oh, you mean what they actually do right now? Kind of crazy, right? you're just saying instead of doing that, the payment is going direct from the shipper to the carrier. But the broker still does everything except he's just not a broker anymore. That doesn't make any sense. That's what a broker does. What I think needs to happen for all brokers, and some of you little guys may be a little pissed at me for saying this, but I think we need to raise the broker bond to $250,000. Because when you go to Pacific Financial's website and you scroll to the middle of it, you know what? Let me do that because that's a fun thing to do. When you go to, what is it, PFA Protex or something like that. Let me see if I can find it. Yeah. Because look at this. This is gonna shed some light on why the current bonding requirements they don't work. And it really does. All right. So when you go to the Pacific Financial, and this, keep in mind, this is one bonding company. Granted, they're a very large company. But let me put this on the screen. So this is a list of all the brokers since January 12th, who have FMC, who have had their authorities canceled, and then it shows estimated payout months. So that basically, if the authority is canceled on the 1st, then the estimated payout month is roughly 4 months later. All right, so if it's January, it's April. You know what I mean? Back and forth. And if it's June, it's September. That's the way it always works. But look how long this page is. Oh, I'm still scrolling. Still scrolling. This is from January 12th, 2020. 4 months ago. Oh, and then I'm done. But I mean, look at these. These are where is it? So today is the 10th. So these brokers here are losing their authority today, which is fine. It happens. It's unfortunate, but it does. All these that I'm scrolling through right now, all of those are still scheduled to lose their authority. Each one of these people has paid a certain amount to get their $75,000 broker bond. If all these people here, let's just say they all owe double what their bond is, you're not going to get paid. So how anyone would make a justification for removing that certi bonding requirement, which at least guarantees the carrier is going to get some sort of payment, doesn't make any sense. But the problem is that we make the barrier of entry for freight brokers to join the industry way too easy. Because like I said, you don't need to have experience being a broker to file for a broker authority. You don't need to have a lot of money to become a broker. You could set up factoring. You could, you know, pay $1,200 for a bond. Hell, you don't even need to do that. All you would need to do is, I mean, this is what people do every single day. They go and they file for their authority. They call up a broker or a certi bonding company, either Lance or one of the big guys or Pacific Financial or whatever. They buy their bond, maybe not even fully. They just do it like quarterly payments or whatever. They get a customer. The customer pays them. They're supposed to pay the carrier, and they don't, and they just disappear. It happens all the time, all the time. Like literally, it happened today hundreds of times, probably. Well, not hundreds, maybe, you know, a dozen times that a broker decided, okay, I have $100,000 in my bank. Yes, I'm supposed to pay out $100,000 to these carriers, but who knows what's going to happen in the next couple of months? I'm not paying the carriers and I'm done. I'm closing. It happens literally all the time, every single day across this country. It happens. So, what is one trade organization that's supposed to represent the benefit of the truckers? What is their answer? Well, let's just remove the bond. Literally, one of the stupider arguments I've ever seen in my life. I wish he would have called. I think we're even friends on Facebook, or we've messaged on Facebook, so you could message me if you really wanted to, but he won't. He's afraid. No, not afraid. He just doesn't want to do it. Nomad Trucker said, megas equate turnover to capacity. They can't keep the trucks filled because then they don't pay a decent wage. Jason said you tried to calling in and never heard anything. Yeah, I'm having issues with the phone system. So unfortunately, there's nothing I can do about that to fix it except remove. Oh, and I removed the wrong number. Whatever. Let me remove this one. So there. Now no one will call in anymore. But yeah, unfortunately, I'm having issues with the phone system because I just had this. On Monday, I'll set up Google Voice and we'll just use my regular phone to answer the calls that'll work. The Hensley Show said, would I recommend the spot market for running mega carrier at this point? Well, would I recommend it? No, because it's going to affect the smaller carriers. But are they doing it? Yeah, they're going to have to. Because here's the thing, is everybody is feeling the crunch. So the big megas are doing it too. LTL are doing it too. I get the same emails everybody else does. I just choose not to write about negative crap anymore. LTL carriers are facing, you know, layoffs, and they're laying off employees and warehouse workers and cutting pay and doing all that stuff. There's several of them. Some have been printed, some haven't. Other brokers are laying off people. Big trucking companies have laid off some of their drivers because capacity softened quite a bit. Remember when the GM plants went on strike, or UAW workers went on strike, and they were only on strike for what, like 2 weeks? And all those trucking companies were about to go belly up, and you know, big media outlets were covering all that stuff because they're about to go belly up. It's literally going to happen right now. Yes, people are putting in the PPP paperwork to make sure they're getting their payments and all that stuff, but it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard, and hundreds of companies are closing. So would I say that a big mega carrier should jump on the spot market to make sure they can keep people employed? Yeah. Is it going to have lasting effects to the people that are currently working the spot market? Yeah. There's nothing that could be done. Everybody has to try to make a living and do as best as they can. And right now, it's hard. It's hard times. So I hope that answers your question. Jason Miller said, we'll be bouncing 300 miles on Monday due to low rates. Being offered $1 a mile currently, we'll be taking a 10-day break and hope markets will rest. That's a pretty good idea. If everyone can afford to do it, go home, hang out with your family, ride dirt bikes, be, you know, quarantine, be by yourself, do whatever you got to do. If you can get out of the truck, you know, you can't go to beaches. So I wouldn't say if you live in your truck, you can go anywhere fun, because you can't, because everything's closed. But if you can avoid it and you have, I mean, think about what you lose. You lose making a little bit of money on the truck, but you're not really going to make that much anyway. And the only thing you're doing is you're potentially opening up an opportunity for someone who doesn't have the luxury of going home because they have to try to run it as much as they can. You're going to afford them the opportunity to maybe make some money, even though rates are low. And like I said yesterday, we're not at the bottom of the freight clip. Rates are going to drop even more. That's what everyone's forecasting now. You know, Bank of America or JP Morgan Chase, like economists yesterday, said they're anticipating a 20%. What'd they say? They anticipate 25 million people will file for unemployment, and they've upped their GDP reduction from 25%, which is what they originally thought as of last week, to they've increased it to, they believe now that there's going to be a 40% reduction in GDP in 2020. That is crazy. And I don't really know what it means besides the fact that we're screwed. But other than that, I don't really know. It's just not good. Not good. No matter which way you look at it, it's not good. Let me read some of these comments. We have a bunch. Justin Schribner said, why should companies like TQL be able to have 75K? No, in most of, here's the kicker too. When we talk about brokers and we talk or broker bond and surety bond levels, most big brokers do not have $75,000. Most big brokers have $250,000 or more. Why? Why not? It shows that they're more financially secure. You know what I mean? Because a surety bond, when I had my bond, I paid $1,800 a year. Was not very expensive. My credit wasn't perfect. I had, you know, 5 million companies going at once. And you know, I personally guaranteed everything because I was an idiot. That's the thing, is a lot of people just don't under... The bonding requirements are very low. And that's why when I read the article and they said it was a bar for entry for people, I'm like, you guys don't understand the industry. You know, how this is even up for questions, maybe it's just part of the regulations and it has to be put up for comments. But I encourage every one of you, I'm going to see if it's active so I can go and update it. But I'll update my article. I'll put it out like it's a brand new article again so it's fresh on the page. I'll reshare it and then I'm going to put a comment at the bottom and say, everyone, please go and comment about how stupid this is and about how much about how wrong it is to say a bonding requirement is $75,000 is unattainable. Because if it's unattainable to someone, they shouldn't be in the industry. I mean, the TIA commented, that was what was in the Transportation Topics article about it, is the TIA commented and said that if you can't afford to get a $75,000 bond, you should not be a broker. You're responsible for dealing with people's money. If your bond is $8,000 a year, it's because you're horrible with credit. Therefore, you're probably not good with managing money and you shouldn't be a broker. You know, because ultimately you have responsibilities that you have to take care of. And it's just sad, you know, it's just sad. But to answer your question, Justin, most big brokers do not have $75,000 bonds. Most big brokers have $100,000 or $150,000 or $250,000. Do they need it to be compliant? No, but they do it because some customers require it, you know, not really customers actually, but it's just I don't know why they do it. As a security blanket, I guess, to say, hey, we've got... You know, a lot of people do the TI, what is it? TIA performance bond or whatever they call it, $250,000 bond because they don't need it. Who cares? They're never going to use it. They pay their bills, you know? And TQL, I don't know their situation, but you know, I don't know what bond they have. I don't really care, you know. They should have $750,000 because for the 700 employees they just laid off, but no, I'm just kidding. Whatever. TQL, I don't really know. I covered the story yesterday about the additional lawsuit. That story did very well, but then it also got picked up by a bunch of other local news and everybody. So we're gonna have some effects from that one, I think. Nomad Trucker said they still pay factoring companies. I don't know. Laz said something about his group, trying to slide his group name in there. Justin Schribner said a local brokerage just opened. The owner filed bankruptcy last August and then opened a brokerage. Yeah, that happens a lot too. I mean, that's the thing. And technically, by law, they're not supposed to be able to do that because they're supposed to say, hey, we previously owned a company and didn't do well and went belly up, except they don't. Or they set it up in family names or brothers' names. You know, I had the article where the moving company that had 30 different companies registered on, and it was all controlled by one guy, and it was all a big scam. And they caught him eventually, and he went to jail, and so did 22 other people. But people get away with this crap all the time. I knew a carrier. I worked for a carrier for a little bit that did it. That had a operating authority. It was a moving company. It's right when I was getting involved in trucking. He had a moving company, and then he had a separate MC number, and then he had a third MC number, all active on with insurance, just in case he ever had to shut down and open a new one. He wasn't doing it for, you know, financial reasons. He was doing it because his drivers, he didn't qualify his drivers well enough. And so his drivers were really shitty and kept getting in accidents and or getting overweight tickets in Florida, and he just wouldn't pay them. So they would just switch out the numbers on the truck eventually. It's kind of crazy, but it happens. But then again, that was a while ago. So now you can't get away with it because the insurance companies do VIN checks and all that stuff now. And it's coming. They're going to do it even more. So a lot of these, like, I have some internal sources that say a lot of this stuff that we see with these chameleon carriers and all that stuff, that stuff is on its way out because the insurance companies are getting wise to it. You know, they're starting to be like, hey, it doesn't work with us. So, I think I'm missing a question here. Mr. Lampshade said all these carriers who want to eliminate brokers, could they handle customers paying in 30 or 60 days? No, absolutely not. They would still look for quick pay. They just think customers, you know, do everything they want. That's why, I mean, that's the guy yesterday just saying, well, just ask your customer for more money. They'll pay it. They'll pay house. But no, it doesn't work that way. You know, again, it's a major disconnect in the industry where people just don't really fully understand it. And I can't really fault them for it because we make and I love that saying now, the barrier for entry is so low. People are able to get in right now. But it's crazy, you know? Yeah, let's see what some of these other comments are. Laz said, personally, I think it's even better alternative to a singular bond amount would have to be a bond amount equal to the amount of revenue. So yeah, but you couldn't do that because it flux, because like, for example, this week I probably did, you know, $80,000, you know, $100,000 in freight revenue. Next week, I probably am not going to do that much. So, you know, that wouldn't work. To be honest, it would be too up and down. You know, unless you independently, like, you know how you could buy trip cargo insurance? If you did something like that with the Certi bonds, you were individually bonded for each transaction. But yeah, it wouldn't work. They would never do that either. Justin Schribner said he's been saying it for years, but it should be equal to 3 months revenue. But again, you can't anticipate growth. You know, you get someone like me, I may start a brokerage, but within 3 months, I could be doing $1 million in freight revenue. Yeah, but you don't know that until it all depends on what kind of customer you get and how good the person is in sales and all that stuff. But whatever. Laz said, you want to plug in my page? I'm going to plug in your podcast. He's got like freight brokers and truck drivers. It's the second one. He used to have a different one. Freight brokers and freight agents is what it is. It's got like 70 members. You know, I don't even plug my groups. So I have a bunch of groups too. They're load board groups, but nobody's really posting loads anymore either. It's rough. Jason Miller said he grossed $6,500 last week and netted $5,200. I took my revenue and paid 2 months of business bills. There you go. That's why you just sit for a couple of months, or a couple of weeks, you know, let it reset. Spend time with your family, kind of open it up for some other people to potentially make some money and see what's up. It's interesting. After talking to a client today, the majority. Yeah. Yeah. It's the whole thing is interesting because someone asked me too, like, what's going on with factoring. Have I talked to my factoring buddies is what one company was asking me today. And are they seeing a reduction in invoices? And I haven't found out. I haven't talked to them. But it's interesting because I know other people are seeing a hit in cash flow because they don't have any receivables and yet they still have to make payroll. That's the thing about the PPP loans that are coming out. Yes, they're going to guarantee payment eventually and you don't have to pay it back as long as you're making payroll. But the issue is getting the loan. If you didn't file last week, they're running out of money already. That's why we put out the article today very quickly because, you know, Shannon, who does all the bookkeeping articles and all that stuff, she said that, you know, the funds are running out already. They already have a tremendous amount of applicants for it. So it's the whole thing's kind of crazy. Crazy, crazy, crazy. All right, I'm going to play a commercial, and then we got like 10 more minutes till I'm done with this thing. Let's see if the commercial works. I didn't test that either. Well, let's see. Well, that's not good. I'm going to have to figure it out because the goat lost his voice. All right. Well, I'll have to figure it out because for some reason it's not feeding sound back out to... not feeding sound back out, which doesn't make any sense. So I'll have to figure that out. Like I said, I got this late last night. I thought it was a different package. Well, I got a different package for something else, and then I got this late last night delivered by UPS, and I was so excited. I was like, my son, he said, I look like a kid opening presents on Christmas. That's what my son said. But it's very cool. I actually have an extra mic, an extra boom stand, an extra pair of headphones if someone wants that has their own podcast and wants to buy them, because I had to buy a bundle to save $200, and now I'm just going to sell them for $200. So whatever. Kind of pointless. Anyway, let's see. Yeah, so the goat lost his voice. There's nothing I can do about that now. You know what? I think I'm just going to wrap up this show. And here's the kicker. I may go live tonight, maybe 8:30 or 9, and just kind of do an open Q&A again. Why? Because I want to, and I like this stuff. I may put some other goofier buttons and stuff like that. But I may go live tonight. And so if anyone else wants to jump on, I'll set it up so we can have like co-hosts and stuff. And we'll just kind of talk about the industry and ramble. But I'm like 50% committed, so I'm not sure. But I may be doing it tonight. And we'll go. Laz said now I can have guests on the podcast. Yeah, I can have guests on the podcast before, but the problem is I'm very opinionated and I don't like anybody. So I don't want people coming on the show unless I really, really like you, because then otherwise it's going to be like the hotshot guy that came on. I was like, hey, why don't you come on the show? And then I spent the next 15 minutes telling him why he didn't know anything about what he was talking about. So it doesn't really make for a good show, in my opinion. But again, that's why I'm doing this in my house instead of on some big media company, because I'm very opinionated and I love this industry and I don't want to see it ruined. So, but yeah, I do have plans. I have other podcasts as well that I've come up with and that I've started to record, and there's more. This show is kind of just me rambling, talking about freight trucking, freight broker live, asking questions and answering answers. See you guys later.